All right, we are here and again, and this time we let you assist us in writing this workshop. So we would like to hear your questions, what you are interested in with your relationship, with your family, and circumstances between people that you would like to work out, that you would like to know more about, or you would like to know how to work with, and that type of thing. So who would like to begin? Daniel will point you out.
Hello, my name is Karen.
Hello.
I have a 24-year-old son. His name is Ian. And we have an intense love-hate relationship. I adore him, and I know that he adores me. And as soon as we're together, within a short amount of time, we constantly reactivate hurts in one another, and then it gets real reactive. And I want to know how we can heal that. And I know he wants to know how we can heal that. We're both up for it.
All right. Well, the situation here between you and Ian are that both of you are very sensitive beings. You have a high degree of sensitivity, and by that we mean that even if you may not even acknowledging your level of psychic intuition, both of you have that. You both have a certain amount of talents and gifts in areas that are very similar. And we could see that your soul energies are very closely aligned. You parallel each other. He wasn't really able to get a really successful polarization from you, because in some ways, in the deepest of your hearts, in the deepest of your being, you're very much alike. You understand that?
I do.
Yeah.
I do.
So when you have that, and that when you come together, it activates, energizes, and expands that psychic sensitivity, that emotional area. And yes, that's an area where you were hurt when you were a child. And it was an area where when you were his mother when he was a child, that you passed that hurt from your childhood through to him. So what he's doing, in a sense, is he's reflecting to you some of the places where you yourself also have not taken your power back, your love back, your energies back from your parents. And so in a sense, it's both of you are trying to work on it, and both of you have a vision of what it could be when you feel comfortable and feel free in that emotional soul filled place, and you have tremendous love for each other. If we were to go into this type of orientation, we would say that you probably feel very comfortable in a certain sense, very familiar with each other, as if you've spent lifetimes together, and you have. And so in a sense, there is more of a bond of family between you than just the genetics of this particular lifetime. There's a sense that the two of you are on a similar path somehow. Are you aware of that?
Absolutely.
All right. And so what happens is that if you have pain, that his presence is going to, you know, expand it. If he has pain, your presence is going to expand it, you see. So the way to deal with this is for the two of you to realize that really, even though the hurts look like they will go back and forth between you, is if both of you could realize from the point of view of having been a child that it is with your parent. Now, he is a grown person now, yes?
Yes.
You see, how old is he now?
24, almost 25.
All right. And so it's a point of time where if you can let go of your being parent to him, and he can let go of you being parent to him and child to you, When you can bust that kind of relationship, then both of you can look at the pain and say, oh, it's between me as a child and my parents, without, in a sense, playing it on each other. You, in a sense, can detach from the past. And then you can work individually on the past or work together. Say, let's together work on this pain. Not in a sense for him to say, well, here's what you did and you'd hurt and here's how I felt and here's what went on. And for you, because if you're still in a parent-child dynamic with him, then you're going to get a bit defensive. You're going to try and explain to him where you were coming from, and you're going to try to, move it through, because you don't want to be the one who creates pain, you see? So if you can separate the parent-child dynamic out of your relationship, because indeed, the two of you as souls are neither older nor younger than each other. You're basically very aligned in your soul path. So for you to work together and say, let's together heal this, and let's look at you and your mother without looking at mother as me. Let's just look at the pattern. Let's go and work with that on your part of it. And I'll work on my part with me and my parents. And we'll work on it together. You understand?
I do. It's really very beautiful.
All right. So then you come together and without any defensiveness on your part. You see? You don't have to say, try to make yourself come out smelling like a rose here. Because the person that you were that hurt him, or the person that you were that interfaced with him when he felt these pains and where he hurt you and so on, you were a different person than you are now. You've seen your growth, haven't you?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right? You've matured. You've become wiser, And if you can kind of create that detachment, And the two of you kind of have this agreement. If you need a ritual of some sort, you can do that too. Sometimes we have recommended that parents do a ritual to give their children their adulthood. Now, in the Jewish tradition, there's this bar mitzvah and bas mitzvah. All right. Unfortunately, in the culture, the way it used to be, age 13 or 14 or something like that, you entered into adulthood, in a sense. You don't now. So it's actually a ritual in the Jewish tradition that's given too early. There's also the sweet 16 and the coming out parties and so forth. And various traditions have those, entrance into society. Unfortunately, those are all given too young. So we would recommend another ritual of some sort. Don't have to invite everybody. It just can be a private one between you and your child, where you give your child adult status and say, from this time forth, I will be here not as the mother that I used to be, but as your friend. And if there's something that I have to offer you of my wisdom, I'll freely offer it to you without attachment, agenda, and manipulation. And for you, you can, as my child, step into an adult relationship with me. You can call me by my first name rather than mother or mama or whatever it is. And I'll call you by your first name. I won't call you the same way I did when you were a child and when I was upset at you and call you with your middle name and everything. No, I won't do any of that. But I'll respect you. I'll listen to you. I give to you from the bottom of my heart the freedom to be yourself. You don't have to spend any time in your life now, from this point henceforth, trying to please me, trying to make my life any different or any better or anything like that. I gift you this from me, heartfelt, so that we can be friends, we can be soul friends, that we can love each other on a higher level, that we can work together, heart to heart, to explore what true experience of love between two people is. You see?
That is so beautiful.
And give him his freedom. And of course, don't forget to give yourself your freedom too, from your parents. And give yourself freedom from being a parent to him and feeling responsible for his emotional life and being responsible for making sure he doesn't make mistakes and get rid of that responsibility for making sure that he does the right thing and everything works out. Because it's no longer your responsibility. It's no longer your fault. He's an adult now. You see? So you can support each other in whatever you choose to do. So you give yourself your freedom and you give him the freedom and let him give himself the freedom to step into his man self and to be a man. Now, we know in the culture that be a man, oh gosh, is that loaded with crap? All right? Being a man is about being who you are in the integrity of your goodness and your kindness. And he is a very kind, gentle man. You understand?
Yes.
Gentle men are ridiculed in the culture that you're in. The macho man is the one that's approved of, the success man, you know, the provider, the whatever. That man is the one that everybody, being a man means you gotta bite your lip and not show any weakness. You give him permission that if he feels vulnerability, if he feels weakness, that you're not gonna judge it any longer. Because there's a temptation to do that. Your culture, you know, supports you and say, oh no, I don't want to see him weak. Ask for that from him. For you to be able to be vulnerable, for you to be able to be the person that you are, to be weak, to have idiosyncrasies, and not to be the one who has to have it all together all the time. Let him give you permission. And recognize that his gentleness is a beautiful thing. And for him to honor that as a positive thing, a positive aspect of who he is, that nothing to be ashamed of ever again. You see?
Yes, I do.
All right, because both of you have really quite a depth. Do you both like music?
Yes.
All right. And maybe in this ceremony, maybe you put on a piece of music that both of you really like. Something, just to breathe in that music, because both of you vibrate on a nonverbal level so strongly. The music can, in a sense, be the reinforcement and complete the ritual. You see?
Yes.
Thank Maybe you. A song that's inspirational for both of you. You can sit down, discuss what can it be. You know, don't throw this ritual on him unawares, you know. Hi, Mom, I'm over here. I wanted to bring you back this, what I got. Oh, son, I wanted to give you your freedom to be yourself. Huh? Don't, you know, in a sense, plan it with him. Let him know that this is a sacred moment between the two of you as souls. All right? It's one of the greatest gifts that you can give yourself as well as your son. And then you can open your hearts to each other. The pain can be released. The forgiveness can be complete. Because until that pain is released, until the anger and the hurt is expressed and released, and you can express yours to your parents, he can express his to you and his father, and you can be both done with it. You see?
Thank you. That's so wonderful. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. And we wish you the very best on that. For those parents who have actually done this kind of thing, you will be amazed at the amount of light that their children can then radiate. They can step into their light and it is so freeing. It just drops all sorts of guilt off because, you know, your son feels guilty about, you know, bringing up this stuff. You know, but if he realizes it's not going to be something that's going, you're going to take personally and you're going to be all agitated about, and it's going to create a big row and there's going to be some door slamming and yelling, blah, 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 blah. If he can say, you know, let me let it out. Let me be heard. Maybe that's the big thing, you know, just hear it without you feeling, oh, I got to do something about it, or I got to defend it. Just let him speak it. Let him bring it out. And you just hold the space of unconditional love for him. And then ask his forgiveness. And let him forgive you. And then perhaps you ask him to forgive, you know, let it go both ways. As he forgives you, you forgive him. Hey, the two of you planned this, you know, on the other side. You planned, I'm going to get together with the, and we're going to like hit each button and we're going to, you know, bring out our stuff. Juicy stuff. So forgive both ways and then you're both free. And then do something that's celebratory together after the music. You know, go to a movie together or go to a street festival or something. Just do something just fun together and light. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, who's next?
Hi, my name's Colleen.
Hello.
The Irish ingenue that Ginger was talking about earlier.
All right.
In fact, interestingly, she and I, when we were talking, ended up bringing up my sister. And that's where there's a lot of pain there. I'll often flippantly say, whatever, when I talk about her, because it's just too much.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We are so, it appears to me, very, very different.
Yes.
I'm the firstborn. She's the secondborn. I was the tall, thin one. She was the tall, fat one. I was the funny, entertaining, popular, took care of my parents, took care of my little brother. I was tried to be all things to everybody.
Ah, typical firstborn, yes.
Typical firstborn. And so I didn't leave a lot of space for her to worm her way through to the light, you know what I mean?
Yes.
I've seen this for years. I have been willing to talk about it for years. I have been willing to do whatever for years. My sister is stuck. Mm-hmm. She hates me. Mm-hmm. I think she love hates me. But I think she hates me because she blames all of the things that haven't gone wrong in her right in her life, which are many, because of me. It just, and I would really like to heal that. I do not want to go through another lifetime of this with her. I would like to have a sister, someone to, like, I adore my girlfriends. I'd like to have, you know, we're really close in age, so why can't we just be friends?
How close in age are you?
3 years apart.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, the thing is that all you can change is you. You can't change her approach to it. So here's what we would suggest from your side. In order to give her the greatest freedom to step into whatever expression or whatever awareness that she and her soul path can allow her. All right. The first thing to do is to forgive yourself. Really forgive yourself. Not just say, oh, you know, I know the circumstances and our rationality. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Really to get down in there and go and step into her and look through her eyes at you and feel her pain. And realize, yes, you were all things. You took all the space. Yes, exactly. Where was she going to be the shining one?
Well, exactly. And my mother took up all the space. And so, since everybody, this is really interesting given what you just said, I just thought of this. My mom was bigger than life and used to say to me, oh, honey, you're just like me. You are just like me. So heaven forbid I should veer out of that bigger than life mode.
That's right.
So then I was born and became bigger than life. So
yes.
Now there's two great big bigger than life people in the family.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister.
All right. Any other siblings? Or is that it?
A brother who was like, you know, in family dynamics, like the cipher. He was just kind of there.
And where is he in birth order?
Third.
All right. And how many years?
11 between he and I.
That's a big gap.
Yeah.
It's almost like he's not in the same family, really, in a way.
In many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother was so busy being bigger than life that I really got to be the mama to my brother, which brought me great joy and pleasure. I loved doing that.
Mm-hmm.
The pain that's here now is he told me a couple birthdays ago how he really found it hard to believe I could have abandoned him. My sister told him she was very involved in drugs, and that was where she found her light. She has told him that he would have been entirely unloved if it weren't for her taking care of him and raising him. This is such a rewrite of history and so absolutely not true,
mm-hmm.
but he is believing her. Well, that just broke my heart because I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't believe that kid, you know. So it's really twisted, and I just ignore them and live my own life because it's too painful.
All right. Okay. See, the thing is here.
Too much information.
No, it's just right. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Right. It's a beautiful example of how your sister did not feel that she had any impact in the family. And when she got listened to by someone who was younger than her, right, she in a sense said, yes, here's somebody who hears me. Here's somebody to whom I'm bigger than life.
Uh-huh.
All right? So I'm going to redeem myself. I'm going to find the place that I need to validate myself as being worthy, as being okay, as being good enough. I will use that relationship for me. So he belongs to me.
Even though it's a lie?
Yeah, certainly. But you see, reality is all an illusion anyway.
Right.
So all of you have stories that you tell yourselves. Is there real truth to every piece that you tell yourself? No.
This is
you make up a really good story. This is my life and I'm going to stick by it, right? So the thing here is to understand when you look through her eyes that this is the mechanism she used in a sense to give her life some meaning, some purpose, some value, as overshadowed as she was by you and her mother. You see?
Mm-hmm. I do see.
So she had to rewrite history so that she wouldn't be in continuous pain.
I see.
She wouldn't feel continuously unworthy, less than, useless, you know, despicable, who knows, whatever, all that kind of stuff, you know, untalented, stupid, whatever it was that she threw in as the implications because she didn't have this bigger than life, you know, persona. All right. Now,
she actually does have a pretty huge persona.
Yes, but you
but
see,
it's very different from mine and my
mom. Of course, but it's not valued because as a child, it wasn't like you and her mom.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that was the way she was orienting to value. And she doesn't have that value, so that's why she had to find her value avenue, her channel of value, so to speak. Now, from your point of view,
I love her.
Of course, and you love your brother too.
I do.
Both of them have grabbed on to this story, so that because both of them were younger sibs to you, so both of them were in your shadow. They were, in a sense, on the same polarity from you. They got together on the other polarity from you, on the other extreme. And they say, hey, you and me, let's get together over here. That's politics. You understand? They're what they're doing is validating themselves, giving reinforcement to themselves in the story that they tell. Everybody has their story. All right? So here's what we would suggest for you to do. Is to first of all forgive yourself and start looking at who, if your mother had not been bigger in life and had not continuously told you, you're just like me, you're just like me, you're just like me, who would you have become?
Who I am now.
Right. Right. And feel how good it is to be the person you are now. Yes?
Yes. Yes. Oh, absolutely.
All right. Now, in your mind's eye, imagine yourself being the person you are now then.
Wow, that would have been so different.
It wouldn't it? Mm-hmm. If you were the person you were now, then the dynamic in your family would have been vastly different between your sister and your way younger brother. All right? What we'd like to suggest is for you to do a meditative visualization. Just imaginative fantasy, okay? To let go of what you say, this is right, this is the truth, and by golly, they're taking away the truth, and they're taking away my light, they're taking away my power, they're taking away love for me, and let it go, and imagine, and redream your family. Redream your family with you being who you are now. Then. Redream your relationship, just reimagine it. In fantasy, how you would support your sister and how you would love her and how you would admire her light and her uniqueness and her difference and how she would appreciate your uniqueness and your difference because you would be different from your mother.
Very.
You see? Uh-huh. You'd be on the same side of the polarity. You'd be bonded differently if that were the case. You understand?
I do.
Okay. And then go and do the same thing with your younger brother as well. And just imagine what the dynamic between the three of you would be. Then, forgive your sister for making up this fantasy to assuage her pain. Forgive your brother for joining the fantasy to assuage his pain. Okay? Forgive them. Forgive them for making something up. Let go of being right. Let go of the truth. It doesn't serve you here. Does it? Just to be aware of the truth is like it reinforces the pain of the loss you have experienced. You understand how it reinforces that? It aggravates the loss. Is that they would make up this story that's not true, right?
Right.
Right? It's like they don't listen to me. I don't have any impact.
Well, they see me. My sister really loves. So I have to go back and be my different self. I try hard to be I am who I am today and try to bring that to the relationship today.
Right, but you see.
But it doesn't matter. It's like spitting against a brick wall. She's so, both of them.
No, well, they've got you fixed at a certain age.
Okay.
Right, and they're not necessarily needs to change. But the point is that if you redream it, all right, then when you approach them, you already have the energy of that. You don't have to try to behaviorally get there. You're holding a dream. Now, when you're around a person who holds a dream or holds a vision, you can feel it radiate off their body. When you get into synchronicity with that person, it's called getting in sync or getting in rapport with that person, you get into alignment with their dreams and visions too. Okay, so we would suggest any time that you communicate with your sister, you know, you've apologized, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, multitudes of times, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, don't apologize anymore. You've done enough, okay? See, the thing is that she's got you in guilt. So the resonance of this dream holds no guilt between anybody. You're not guilty for anything. You don't have to apologize anymore. You've already done your stint. Been there, done that. And when you stop apologizing, that will effectively start changing that relationship. Because she's got you over her knee with guilt. And that gives her a cheap sense of power. It's a cheap thrill. You know what manipulation is? All of you have manipulated at one time or another, yes? Got to admit this, okay? Don't pretend you've been nicey-wicey all your life, okay? You have manipulated somebody at some time, all right? And she's got you manipulated. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel when you're around her? Guilty. Not quite good enough.
Well, she's really good at making me, trying to make me That's...
Yeah.
Is that right, Colleen? Well, you know, the other day...
It's the voice tone, isn't it? Any of you notice the voice tone? What you feel when a certain voice tone appears in your parents, your siblings, your children? Right? It gets in there. It gets in there, rankles in. So when she goes into that voice tone, in the past, what emotion would you go into?
In my head, I go, fuck you. To her.
Right.
I get pissed.
You get angry.
Again.
You get angry, right?
I get up and excuse myself because I don't want to be around it. I don't need to be constantly, everything I say, examined, criticized, looked at in every angle, and every single angle finds a way to put me down. So I say shit. I say nothing. I just sit there and smile a lot and listen. Because that's the safest place to be.
Mm-hmm. That's your survival mechanism, isn't it?
In this, yes. So, mm-hmm.
Okay. Don't do that any longer. Mm-hmm. When she does that, you know, do you remember? Well, maybe you do, maybe you don't. This is a long time ago. We're talking about a presidential debate between Reagan and Carter, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. And Carter would say this and that and the other in this little tone of voice, and Reagan would shake his head sadly and say, "There you go again." It won the debate and the presidency for him. "There you go again." All right, that's all he said. But it expressed what? It expressed tremendous amounts of opinion. She's a broken record. You can say it too. The thing is that you have not expressed yourself. When you forgive, and we're going to take you all through an experience of forgiveness so you can clear, and you might want to choose your sister and do this experience with her. When you do that, you have to get out all the rage, all the pain, all the anger, all the crap, that emotional stuff that's in there. Now, you don't do this in person, physically.
No, I understand that.
You know, but you do it emotionally. You do it in meditation. And your subconscious gets that you've cleared it. You've said it. It's off your chest. Mm-hmm. All right? In the meditation, one of the things that's very important is that who you're going to forgive and be forgiven by, whatever person it is that you choose to work with today, is going to hear you. Really hear you. Mm-hmm. Now you're going to say, "Well, Galexis, we're just going to be making it up." Right. But look how effective their story is that they've made up, right? They're living according to it. They're making it true because they're saying it enough. They're reinforcing it. They're making it real for themselves. So what you want to do is to make an energy of clarity, an energy of peace, real for you so that you never have to take anything personally again that she says. Because she's going to continue to do it as long as it pushes your button, as long as it forces you to sit there and zip it and smile, and as long as she's manipulating you and she knows it gets to you, she's going to continue doing it. It's her power thrill. If you take the power thrill away from her, mm-hmm. what's going to happen? And you can't do it by changing her. You can only do it by changing you. And we're not saying don't care. You do care. But what you do is that you let it go. So that when she does that, you just say, "Oh, there she goes again. Isn't this funny?" And imagine if you're writing a kind of a comedy skit, right? And this is the fodder of comedians everywhere, is it not? They'll say, "Oh, my wife, my husband, you know, my child," and whatever, and they will make fun of this, of the situations that most people see deadly emotionally serious. Thank God comedians do that for you, right? For some people, it's an awakening. Yeah, that's right. They say things that is forbidden for you to say. But they get away with it because it's funny. What if she could say whatever she wanted to and it was funny? And you didn't take it personally, and you didn't take it as a rejection, and you weren't angry at her for manipulating you anymore, because hey, she's not really manipulating you. You've cleared. She's not pushing your button, and you're not squirming under it.
Yeah, this is a bit, this this meditation and I will go do some my own person. She takes that, then she brings it down to my daughter's level, who's only 14. Say, her ears stick out, which they don't. She's a little fat, don't you think?
Well, what
does that push my buttons?
Right, so
I think my daughter's perfect.
Right, but you don't say that. What you do is you go, oh, there you are.
That's what I'm imagining. That was what yeah. I was going with.
That's what a hoot. You think her eyes stick out. Oh, my gosh. You know, you see so-and-so down the street, you know, or whatever. You know, just laugh about it. Don't take it seriously. Otherwise, you know, as long as you take it seriously, she's going to keep doing it. If you don't take it seriously, if you laugh about it and you say, oh, there you go again, and you just want to make everybody else fat, don't you? You know, whatever. You know, just laugh at it and say stupid stuff. Okay?
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
First, you do this in meditation.
I agree. I understand that.
So that you get how it feels and you get the freedom of it. Okay? The freedom of not having your button pushed and the freedom of not being reactive, automatically reactive. Because as soon as you're automatically reactive, your power's gone. You've given all your power away to her. You're looking to her to validate you.
Because I'm the one who's carrying the guilt. If only I hadn't been such a...
Right.
Taken up so much
space
as a kid, then she'd be happy.
So your ideal, your fantasy is, if we could just have this great relationship with sisters where we can pal around and be girlfriends and like, oh, I want that relationship. Because that relationship would validate you. She'd be validating you. And then you would feel okay. There'd be no guilt.
I can see that. Yes, I see what you're saying.
That's a piece of it, okay?
Okay.
That's a piece of it. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to have that fantasy attached to the relationship because it makes the relationship unreal and it maintains the manipulation that she has successfully found.
Yes.
To keep you
yes.
skewered. You know? All right?
Okay.
So you free yourself. Take your power back from her.
And laugh.
Okay. And laugh.
Okay.
Don't take it seriously anymore. You know why she's doing it. And in a sense, you know who you are now. You don't need her to validate you any longer. She may never, ever be your girlfriend.
That's what I'm afraid of. That's so sad. That would just be you. We're in her 50s. You'd think, you know.
Don't be arrogant here to think that this is the way a relationship should be. It's the way you want it. You desire it. But as long as you want it and you desire it, she's got you. She can have her way with you.
Yeah.
Let go of the fantasy. Let go of the dream. Realize that it's not your job to change anybody but yourself.
Okay.
And give yourself your freedom and have a blast with your girlfriends.
Absolutely.
And call them your sisters. Because actually what happens is that when you leave your birth family, your DNA, you know, what you're doing is that the people that you love the most are part of what we'd call your spiritual family. They're true family on an energetic level.
Mm-hmm.
You see, on the light level. So your girlfriends are your family on the light level. Let them be your sisters.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Enjoy that. Mm-hmm. Have a blast with it. And so your sister doesn't come along. Your birth sister. You don't need your birth sister to feel okay about yourself. You feel okay about yourself. You laugh. You don't take anything personally. Guess what's going to happen? You break the negative bond between you and her. She no longer can manipulate you. So what's she going to do? First, she's going to try harder. She's going to pull out all the stops. Believe us, she knows the worst nightmare stuff to tell you, right?
You teased me. You used to tell me I had poppy outy eyes.
Right. And you said, boy, was I a silly person then. Ha, ha, ha.
I did start laughing because I forgot I'd said that. And when she said it, I looked at her eyes and I thought, you're wrong.
They are.
That was pretty creative of me as a little kid. Oh.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so I'll laugh when she says
Yeah. Oh, how silly of me.
Yeah.
Weren't we all just silly kids at one time? Yeah. You know, so when you free yourself, she has to change her strategy because she'll try harder and harder and harder and harder and harder. And when she keeps poking and poking and digging and digging and digging and she's not getting a response, what am I going to do now? She'll shift strategy. She'll change. She may not change the way that you fantasize and hope and your ideal, that this is what the ideal family should be. Every child, you know, wants the ideal family. Every mother wants the ideal relationship with their children. Every sibling wants the ideal relationship with a sibling. You don't get that. You get stuff to work on. That's what you get. All right? You on yourself. So when you free yourself, she will change strategy. And so will your brother. Because then the story doesn't have any power anymore that they've made up. You see? Mm-hmm. It doesn't hold substance anymore because only reason it was there was as a buffer to you, as a way to get to you. If it doesn't get to you, what's the use of the story anymore? Mm-hmm. They'll discard it. They'll look for a more successful strategy. They may never find it. And you may never have the relationship you would really like to have. But every now and then, in your conversations with them, taking it lightly, laughing, just say, you know, I love you. You're just, you know, and they say stuff. Oh, you used to call my puffy eyed, blah, blah, blah. Okay, you and you go up to her, hug her. Oh, I love you. You're just so cute.
Okay.
What? You know, you're like, huh, what?
Now I'm feeling like, oh, I'm taking up too much time. This is the... You know, I'm taking it. There's a lot of people here who have questions.
You like guilt, don't you?
Maybe I got this from my sister.
Juicy.
Carolyn, Colleen, pass the baton. Don't take up too much space here because there's other people.
Okay, that's your shame.
That's my shame.
Your guilt.
It's my guilt.
Okay, let it go.
I've got to get rid of that.
Let it go. Enjoy your life.
Okay.
Okay? Because, frankly, we want to tell you, there are other people in this room that... might have something similar in their families. Oh, my. You've never heard of that before, guilt, right? That's a strange emotion to have, right? Oh, no, you've never been manipulated by your family members, right? See, you see what we're saying?
Mm-hmm.
All these answers that we gave are for all of you. And you can all find places in your life you can apply them. All right. So thank you so much for that question.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay.
All right. So who's next?
Hi. I find that my mother is often putting down my father, and in turn, I often put down my husband, especially when he's drinking. And I'd like some strategy how to be more supportive or more comfortable with the situation.
All right. What does your mother generally put your father down for? What's her favorite criticisms?
Everything.
He does everything wrong, right?
He doesn't do enough.
Or he doesn't do enough.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Do you ever feel that about your husband?
No. He's the opposite in that way.
He
does plenty of stuff. If anything, my complaint is he's not just present. He's always doing. Or my complaint would be that he doesn't want to go out and do fun things, socially fun things.
Because he's so serious a provider or something? Or
that, and he's just burnt out from being just so friendly to everybody.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. Is your father a friendly guy, too?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But not like my husband. My husband's off the charts.
Well, it's one of the things that attracted you to him.
Absolutely.
Like, hey, I can heal all this mother-father stuff. Hey, you know, how convenient. I can be mom and this can be dad and I can clear out some good juicy stuff, right? So here you are seeing that translation to generation, next generation, to you criticizing him. Now, when he drinks... What is it that he does during his drinking that disturbs you? Besides the fact that, of course, he's drinking, and which in your culture, tremendous amount of judgment on that. But what is it that changes him? What happens with him? Does he embarrass you? Does he do stupid things?
Yes. He continues to talk as if he's some knowledgeable expert about whatever it is he's talking about, telling me how it should be done, and I call it like being on a soapbox.
So he does a little preaching when he gets a little tipsy, huh?
And it sometimes doesn't even make sense. Sometimes it doesn't even follow one sentence to the next.
All right.
Like my older son will say to him, "You're a fucking moron. What the hell are you talking about?"
And how does he respond to that?
He'll just turn the cheek, start talking to somebody else. I don't know.
All right. Now, we want to point out that drinking is his way of breaking state, okay? It's like he's on focus. He's on stage all the time.
Yes.
And so when he drinks, it takes away that sense of pressure that he puts on himself to be perfect. He lets himself be very imperfect. And he enjoys it because he can say whatever he wants to and he doesn't care. You understand?
Yes, although he seems to be that way normally. I always say to him, you know, why do you drink? Other people drink to be like you are normally. He says things to people that no one else would say to people. And they walk away laughing. And
When he's drinking or when he's straight?
Both, but when he's straight.
Okay. The aspect of drinking has, there's several aspects here. But the most important one is that drinking is a way to assuage emotional pain. Being Mr. Nice Guy, Friendly Guy, always laughing, giving people all sorts of humor and wit is a facade. It covers the pain. We're not to say that he isn't smart and funny and brilliant and so on, but there's a big wad of pain underneath there. And he gets tired of feeling the pain and covering it. So when he drinks, it numbs it out, so he doesn't feel the pain under there. You understand?
Yes.
Okay. When he drinks, remember that. He's in pain. He's got to drink. It buffers. It numbs the pain. And love him and appreciate that he's not in pain. Yeah, he's going to say stupid things, put his foot in his mouth, act like a fool or whatever he does. But he's not in pain. You understand?
And I'm supposed to be thankful for this?
No. It's just one of the ways for you to let go of taking it so personally. Because when he drinks and he starts saying non-sequitur stuff that makes no sense or weird stuff and pontificates and who knows where he's going, how do you feel about you? How do you see that reflecting you and your choice of him as your mate?
Regretful.
Yeah. Yeah. That undermines your self-esteem. You're embarrassed about yourself. You understand?
Yes.
Okay. So that's why you get angry when he does it. So instead, do this process we're going to do today, the forgiveness process. We would suggest to do it with him. And then next time he drinks, just remind yourself he's not doing it to make a fool out of you. Don't take it personally. He's doing it to cover his pain so he can continue to be that charming, delightful husband most of the time that he is.
Is there some way to perhaps support him in breaking through his pain?
Well, he's got to be willing to go there. And he's got such a successful, well-developed facade that works so well, 90% or more of the time. How are you going to convince him of the value of doing that? He's got a good facade. All he has to do is get drunk every now and then. And then he's kind of like, it gives him a break from it, and he can go and do it some more. You understand? He's built a facade. This is his coping mechanism for life. It gives him an aura of brilliance, which you're attracted to. You were attracted to that. It lifted you up. It made you feel more. Recognize that. Yes. Hey, look, I'm married to this fabulous guy, except when he drinks. And then, oops, my gosh, why did I get married to this guy? Because you looked for him to give you validation. And you need to take that burden off of him. That might be contributing to his pain.
Yes.
Okay? He should not be your point of reference for your life. Your point of reference should be you, inside you. Your choice is fine. You be the light being that you are. Don't look to him to make you look good. You already know you're pretty good, don't you?
Yes.
Right. So you use him as your, he's like kind of the embellishment for you, for your image. Let it go. Love yourself enough to recognize you're light enough, you're bright enough, you're big and beautiful enough, you're smart enough, you're okay enough. Okay?
Yes.
All right? So when you forgive him, forgive yourself for looking to him to give you something you thought you were lacking. Then he won't feel that pressure from you. Because on a psychic level, he feels it.
Yes.
You know, when somebody's expecting something of you, you feel a pressure, don't you?
Yes.
They don't have to say anything. You just feel it in the urgency or in the tone of voice or whatever. You feel it. And you know, it's really uncomfortable. So let it go. You don't have to please everybody. You don't have to demonstrate how smart you are. Look, I married him. How smart am I? You see? Because as soon as you do that, as soon as he drinks, you're like, I must have been stupid. See how fast you lose it? You understand?
Yes.
And we're exaggerating a bit, but just to make the point. You're just great as you are and love yourself. Look at your mother. She's got the same problem, doesn't she? She was looking to your father to make her look good. And your father keeps doing, messing up and making her look bad. That she's stuck with this dodo. She's stuck with this weird person. You understand? Can you see where that's working there?
I don't see it so much in them, but...
Okay, but look for it next time. When she's criticizing him, look at her and see how she feels inadequate. Okay? So she's going to blame her inadequacy on him because he's doing something that's stupid or he's doing something that's not right or something's wrong with him. Let's put the attention over here. Let's not look at me. Mm-hmm. I don't feel good enough. But let's look over him. He's obviously, it's obviously his fault that I'm not good enough. Just look at how they play the game. Use them. You always use your parents as their fabulous mirrors because you mirrored them. So, hey, why don't you use them and see what they're mirroring back to you? They're mirroring back to you your stuff that you mirrored back to them. It's a family thing. But recognize that there's a part of her that doesn't feel okay. You want to feel okay about yourself regardless of whether your husband puts his foot in his mouth or not. That you love him regardless. That he's your wonderful, delightful, glorious man. And because, hey, you're cool. You're really great. And you're going to have a fun life. You're going to celebrate and you're going to just have fun regardless of what's going on. You understand?
Yes.
Okay. So you forgive yourself for having looked to him for validation. You forgive him for feeling overburdened by it and other validations that other people have put on him too, that he's taken on. You're not the only one, but you put pressure on him. And so let him forgive you in meditation too. So let yourself then, like we mentioned in the previous one, envision if you were full and complete and rich and you didn't need any validation from anybody else whatsoever, and you just loved yourself just the way you were, and you're just, you know, not an ego place, but you just really appreciate the being that you are, the value that you have, the wisdom you've learned. And you just sit with that and imagine, okay, let me imagine him getting drunk and me just sitting there and holding this appreciation of myself and this unconditional acceptance and love of him. What if it removes enough pressure from him to validate you, to please you, to build you, to lift you, to lighten you, that he may not feel as much need to drink? Could happen. You see? Because
yes.
It's not like he gets vastly different. It's not like some drunkards, when they drink, their personalities change night and day. He's just numbing out the pressure and pain. As you say, he doesn't really know how to really let go and have more fun and be loose and free with himself. He doesn't think it's okay. He doesn't think it's all right. He's always on stage. He's got to perform. He's got to have some way to take the pressure off. And he may not be willing to let go of boozing until he finds a way to release steam safely. He's doing that as a protection. There are some guys who cannot release steam at all. They blow. And you would not want to see what happens when these guys blow. Some of you have had fathers who are like that, who are like, you know, rigid, on the track of this, push, push, drive, focus, focus, focus. And at some point, they just blow. It's painful for everybody. Or, you know, some people who are like have parents who are bipolar or who are manic depressive, you know. Hey, you lucked out. You see. So for you, it's much more of allowing him to be free of the pressure. And when you can, as a chance, give him a suggestion that he deserves a little vacation. He deserves some fun. What's important in his life? It's for us to be together having some fun. That kind of thing. Just kind of see if you can ooch him into that. And take the pressure off of him, okay?
Thank you.
All right. All right. Another one? How are we doing? One more? Let's do one more. All right.
Hi, Galexis. I have a question that has to do with my family, but also family traditions and religion. And
yes.
My family, it was about suffering. And the more you suffer, the better a person you are. And if you were happy, you were like a buffoon or an idiot, and you were really looked down upon.
Mm-hmm.
And I still have this really difficult time giving up this idea of suffering. And when I did, and when I was younger, I would laugh. I'd be punished even more for it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so,
how dare you be lighthearted?
Right.
Look at what we all go through.
Right. And so I still, to this day, have, if I get too happy, I have this fear something terrible is going to happen or I'll be punished. And even if I'm around certain family members, if I do act a little too happy, they'll make sure they say something to
keep you down,
bring me down, make sure I go to a very bad place. And then
do they still do like traditional religious events and rituals and so forth?
Not so much like that, but the energy is there. The energy is still there about if you don't have your family, you have no one, and if I don't act like this, then I'll lose them. And
the glue that holds your family together is a juicy pile of guilt, right?
Yeah, and suffering and being
suffering
a martyr.
Is the expression of that.
Right, and being the martyr, and that mm-hmm. I have this intense guilt because I can psychically feel them around me and energetically, and I can feel how they get, and it's almost like I'm letting them down, and then I feel very sad for myself, and it just brings me into a really sad space. So I'm not sure how to let go of the suffering because I still feel kind of frightened of it myself. I get scared something negative will happen, and usually it does with my family. Mm-hmm. They're not generally happy about it, so I'm not sure where to go with that.
All right. Have your parents ever said they wanted you to be happy?
Yeah, but you could feel they didn't mean it. Like, it was just a thing that they said. They wanted me to be happy if I pleased them.
They didn't actually say that, did they? But it just
implied it. Yeah, kind of. Like, somebody would say to me, wow, you're doing so well. And then, I'm really concerned about you for that. I'm glad you're happy. But. Right. Always like that.
All right. This is tradition.
Jewish guy.
The whole Jewish race is held together, yeah. Stuck together by guilt. It's just right there, you know. Yeah. Catholics are doing a fairly good job too, but the Jews are the masters of it,
yeah,
right?
They really are.
And in fact, the way they validate themselves is through suffering.
Yes, absolutely.
Nothing is worth anything unless you've really suffered over it.
Right, and right now is Rosh Hashanah, and the stories that they tell are about the 10 martyrs.
Of course.
And how nothing could be greater than to die with the Torah wrapped around you for God. And that's what you all aspired for, this intense suffering. And and I feel guilt walking away from it. It's still, I still feel connected to them somehow, and I don't know how to feel connected with them and not be part of that too. I don't know how to keep that.
Have you ever, when they talk like this, and when you hear people talking about like this, like reinforcing all of this guilt and sorrow and suffering and so on, how do you feel it in your body? Where do you feel it in your physical body? Doesn't it make you a little nauseous?
Yeah.
Like don't you feel like you're going to throw up a bit?
And it makes me angry.
All right, and where is that in your body?
I guess in my solar plex.
Yeah, yeah. Solar plexus gets hit really hard. Solar plexus is your area of power in your body. This is your power. And essentially, what they're doing is saying, we don't want to envy you. We don't want to feel jealous of you. So we don't want you to get too far above us or beyond us. Okay? Because then we're going to feel that you're going to judge us. You're going to look down on us. And we can't have that. Right? So what we're going to do is that here's a line, and we're going to draw this line. And the line is called mildly happy. Okay? And you're not supposed to go over that. You know? You're not supposed to be gloriously happy. You know? You're not supposed to be celebratory. No. You know, if you were male, you know, it'd be, you've got a covenant with God. You know? But the thing is that your people are stuck together with this as... Just as if you look in the in this country, in the United States, is all the ritual and deference and so on paid to the soldiers and the military. You know, they do all these ceremonies when they bring the casket in, they put it into the graveyard, and they all how he gives his service to his country and how noble and how wonderful. If they didn't do that, do you think the next generation of men would be willing to get up and march off to some place and godforsaken place in another part of the world and die? No. They've got to establish the value to continue it. Why? Because it validates them. Because they had to give up. They had to give up their happiness for the tradition. By golly, they don't want you to do it. Then what would show that they were stupid, that they put this whole investment into their suffering and into the value of the tradition. And it was for nothing. You see? That's how important it is. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, it does.
You see, and the thing is that for you, your nature is too happy. But then you came with a different destiny. Now, how are you going to have a foot in both worlds? Right? When you put your foot in their world, you feel guilt. Guilt and shame and... probably you don't have much energy either, do you, when you're around them? You get tired, don't you?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. When your foot's in the other world, where you're not around your family and not around the tradition, how do you feel?
When I read things that are more spiritual, when I remember what I remembered as a kid of, I guess, source energy, it makes me so happy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's more real, isn't it?
Yes.
It's more who you are. You knew too much from the time you were yay high. You've always known too much. Because you had a connection, and your connection was not broken at age 2. You kept your connection for a lot longer. You know that, right?
Yes.
They had to work hard to break your connection. You had to work at breaking your connection. You had to, this was your contract, your agreement with your parents. In order to be your child and make you happy, I'm going to give up my divinity. And later, when I grow up, I'll get it back. You understand?
I do.
You made that agreement. You've grown up. And now you think, well, I want it, but I made this agreement for the love of my family, for them to be happy, for them to care for me, for them to connect with me, for me to belong to them. Belonging is a basic human need. For me to belong there, I have to maintain this agreement. And it's not me. It goes against everything that I know in my soul, in my heart, to be true. Yes?
Yes.
All right. Now, what you've been trying to do is that when you're with them, you've been trying to pretend that you're like them. Yes?
Yes.
And then when you leave, you feel bad because you were being duplicitous. You were not being true to yourself. Yes?
Yes.
All right. First step for you, dear one, is to forgive yourself for this. You put yourself, and you and they chose this situation. We talked about this at the beginning. You choose a situation to come into, because if it hadn't been this heavy and this serious and you hadn't had to shut down, you would not have been motivated to propel yourself into your consciousness later on in your life. But you had to do it to survive, right?
Yes.
You haven't really, in a way, in your heart and your soul, you really don't have any choice but to acknowledge that you are a light being. That's who you are. And what is the essential nature of light? It's joy. It's celebration, happiness, and love. So first of all, you forgive yourself for being duplicitous when you're with them. Because frankly, they cannot hear anything other than the mantras that they give themselves to keep reinforcing it within themselves. Suffer, 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 suffer. They do this to reinforce it in them. It's scary for them. It's chaos. It's the unknown if you come in and you're happy. It's terrifying for them. Just look at it through their eyes, dear one. Here they are. Okay, we've got it set up now. we can, if we suffer enough, okay, then we get the reward of feeling noble and we belong and we are part of the tradition and we validate the, our past, and then the future will validate us. That's the box, right?
Yes.
All right. Now, comes along somebody who's outside the box. That's going to be scary. That's going to be terrifying. What if I was wrong all these many years? Oh, no, 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 I can't be wrong. Oh, no, no, I'd rather kill that person than have my belief system changed to realize I made a mistake, that I chose pain and suffering when I could have had joy and happiness. They're afraid of pain and happiness. Most people are. Are you aware of how, in yourself, how when you've discovered joyous emotions, how nervous it made you? All of you. It's just, it's harder to express and to be with positive emotions than it is with the darker or the limiting emotions. Because you're outside the box of the culture. Not just the Jewish culture. We're talking about the world culture. Look around you. There's suffering everywhere, yes? You know, what, is there any culture that you know of that isn't held together by common suffering? That's kind of like a foundation. You know, what made this nation great? Because, you know, Great Britain was, England was beating on us and so on, and we all banded together and we fought back and we won, and yay, yay us. It was bloody brother against brother, you know, but it founded us. This is our tradition. Don't tread on me. You're starting a new tradition, a new reality. So therefore, forgive yourself for the duplicity that you feel obligated to take on in order to keep them feeling safe. That's your gift to them, is to enable them to feel safe. Do you understand? Does that make sense to you?
I think so.
That's when you pretend to suffer, when you let them shut you down, when you close your mouth, zip it, go quiet, mute yourself. You're saying, I'm doing it so that you don't get freaked out. I'm doing it so you don't reject me.
Yes.
All right. Forgive them as well. Dream yourself the person who says, okay, I'm going to go be with my family. I'm going to put on my Jewish persona now. And you stand in front of the mirror, you dress yourself appropriately, dourly, right? Make sure you wear lots of black or something, you know? No, don't go in there with flowers. No? Okay? Stay subdued. Okay, I'm going to be the consummate actress today. I'm going to go in there and I'm going to just spend my time just practicing loving them and accepting them the way they are. You see what we're saying? Because when you do it consciously, you are not in conflict in your soul because you're doing it consciously. It's the conscious choice. This is a free will universe. This is a you create your own reality universe. And the first step to creating your own reality is to be conscious and to do whatever you do consciously. Even if you're saying, okay, I shouldn't be lying around and vegging in front of the TV set for 4 hours, watching movie after movie all night. This is not good for me. I really shouldn't be doing guilt, 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 guilt. Why don't you just say, okay, I know that it probably would be better for me if I went and had a good night's sleep and was rested and whatever, but I want to do this and I choose to do this and I'm going to choose to veg in front of the, and be absolutely unproductive. What if you chose it? If you choose it, you stay in your power. what really gets to you is that you lose your power to your family. Do you understand? And then when you come back to who you really are, you don't have the power to sustain your light. You feel wounded. Yes?
Yes.
You feel less than. You feel that you're carrying the shame. So when you are consciously being the actress, you go there, play the game with them. And when you leave, you walk out the door, there's your car, they're inside, the car is out here, you're walking out the door, you walk out the front door, you close the door behind you and you say, the play is over for today. And you imagine yourself taking off your persona and dropping it on the curb right there, getting in your car, free. And you surround yourself with all your light being friends and all the different dimensions. And they're saying, oh, yay, welcome back, welcome back. And you're saying, yay, yay, the free me, the light being me. Knowing that you were doing this from love, consciously. Does that make any sense to you?
It does, thank you.
See, you need to distinguish between it. You've let their guilt and suffering bleed through into your life. And you think, maybe they're right. Maybe I should. No, I know I should. That's not a good idea. But. You're going to have to divide these realities. You are living in two realities. And if you're going to survive, you personally, if you're going to survive and not get some horrible disease and die, you're going to have to own your light and do what you came to do. You have a mission. You came to do some big healing, dear one. You know that?
Thank you.
You see, because when you heal yourself on this and you can love and accept yourself as the light being you are, consciously choosing to do that, you can then change the template of your people. What does it mean to be a Jew and be free of the suffering? This paradigm needs to be made. This trail needs to be blazed. You chose to do it. What does it mean to be Jewish and free and happy and celebrating? What does it mean? I'm going to find out. That's a mission. That's part of my purpose. What is joyousness in a Jew? What? Joyous? Jewish? Huh? Can it be? Yes. You're going to discover it. You see? And when you do that, it is added into the collective. It creates a new paradigm. It creates a new possibility. Because within a generation, you'll be amazed at how many young Jewish people are going to come to the light. They're going to step out of the tradition. And you made it possible. Do you understand?
Thank you.
This is a gift to your family that they will never understand or appreciate. That you are freeing them on some level. You are their ticket to the future. Not the suffering carried generation to generation to honor the previous generations. But the celebration to say we are a great people. Look at all the beautiful things that Jews contribute. And if they weren't burdened down with all the guilt and suffering, how much more delightful would it be, huh? Hey, look at the best comedians, okay? Aren't the best comedians generally Jewish or what? Italian or Jewish? You know, it's either Catholic or Jewish, right? They're the best. Why? Because they're the ones who are willing to step over the boundary, over and outside the box, and create a new paradigm. So you have a purpose, a divine purpose here involved in this. Don't be guilty about it. Don't feel sorrow about it. Yes, you won't be able to relate to your family as truly on that level with them. You can't go there. You'll sit with them. You'll listen. You'll be with them. And in meanwhile, you'll just be loving them and loving them, saying, I know they're in the box. Don't judge them. I know they're in the box. And this is the only thing they know to make themselves feel, you know, that they're connected. Connected. They want to stay connected. Your connection is through the light. Theirs is through the pain and suffering. It's still connecting. So love them, forgive them, and cherish them, because you do love them. You can't stop doing that. Just, you can't walk away. You can't let them just reject you. You can't just reject them. It's not about that. That's the way it's always been. It's either you're with us or you're against us, right? You're a new paradigm. I'm with you, and I'm who I am. It takes a lot of forgiveness. It's going to take a lot of strength, and it's going to take a lot of your willingness to appreciate yourself and to remember what you're here to do. You're doing it for you. You're doing it for them. You're doing it for the world. Okay?
Thank you so much, Alexis. Thank you.
You're welcome, dear one. And this is, where are you in birth order in your family?
First.
Oh, see, you really go against the tradition, don't you? Firstborn is generally the one that has to kowtow to tradition. And when you get a spunky firstborn, man, that does mess it up, doesn't it? All right. How many siblings do you have?
One younger brother.
A younger brother. Okay. He'll take over. It's a boy, for heaven's sakes. Much easier for him to take over. And generally, a lot of families do. When the firstborn is a girl and the next one is a boy, the boy will eventually assume the firstborn's position. That's just because it's a chauvinistic, male-dominated culture. That's all. And who reinforces that more than anybody? The Jews. Well, you got others. You got the Islamics over there too. You know, and they're cousins, you know, distant cousins. But you've got, but you see, it's reinforced. But your paradigm is different. You came with a different function, a different focus. And you used this challenge to make yourself stronger. Because if not, you would have been wimpy. You realize that? If it had been so extreme, you'd have been wimpy. But look at how this has strengthened you.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, wimpy is really bad. Weak is bad, isn't it? Yeah. You're supposed to be tough. Be a sabra, you know? Oh, no, the Jews are not the...
Coming from this long line of Lutherans and Calvinists...
Oh, absolutely.
Heaven forbid you should be happy for any length.
Oh, yes, seriousness is the way.
Yes.
Right, all the German tradition, like that, like the Calvinist, yes, all the German tradition, the Catholic tradition, heck, you know, fun was just not in the cards for anybody. Why? It's because if you were having too much fun and laughter like those damn pagans... Right? You couldn't be controlled by the institution of your religion. You wouldn't put your money into your religion. You wouldn't have supported it, you know, the ruling clique. You wouldn't have been controllable. You're controllable by your pain. Look at the Hindus. Oh, you know, whatever caste that they're in. Oh, it's because you're such a lowly person. You're in this low caste because you should feel guilty. You have to work your way up to be in the upper castes. Boy, doesn't that really stick a person there? You know? That's almost worse. But you see, the world is changing. And it's changing because of people like you. And you and you and you and you and you. All of you. It's changing because of you. That's why we're here. We want you to succeed. All right? Yeah. All right.
Thank you, Gillespie.
All right. Okay. Thank you so much. All right. And thank all of you who shared. Wonderful examples. And you see how it works. You see that when you free yourself and you forgive yourself, you clear your relationship with your family, you're free to create a true, honest, authentic reality for yourself and a beautiful one for those you love and for the world. It's a great gift. And you chose a hard time to do it. Now, if you're going to choose to do something to bring light to the darkness, where do you have to start? You have to go to the darkness and learn and create a pathway, a trail out. And you can leave markings on the trail. Go this way. Approve of yourself. Give yourself some love. You know, lift yourself. So you're doing it. There's no reason for you to feel guilty. Guilty means that you're really pissed off. But you don't think you have a right to be pissed off. It's not okay for you to be angry. No, no, you shouldn't be angry. Never, never should be angry. You should always be nice. Nice. Defer to everybody else. Make them happy. Okay? That's the rule. But you're bringing a whole new paradigm here. And where everyone can win. They just don't see it yet. All right, so everyone reinvigorated? All right, we're going to take a break now. And we're going to be back in how many minutes? 20 minutes. And then we're going to conclude with a short exposition on exactly what we're going to do, what the process is, and then we're going to go into a meditation. And so decide who you want to heal your relationship with as an example of a family member, whether it's a parent, a sibling, or a child. And we'll meet you back here in 20 minutes. Farewell.